people. The press was quite heavily represented. Mr. Guggenheim of Newsday, the Ralph Harrises of Reuters, the Lee Hills of the Night Newspapers, and Louise Hutchinson of the Chicago Tribune, and two of my favorite companions, Nan Robinson of the New York Times and Bonnie Angelo, and among publishers, the Samuel Newhouses, she in the most resplendent dress and jewels, and the James Wexlers of the New York Post. There were old friends, the Arthur Krims and the Ed Weisels. One of my favorite moments was with Dr. and Mrs. Lewis Eilers. He's the executive vice president of Eastman Kodak Company, and I've been yearning to get them interested in the whole beautification program. They have, through a sort of a side door, helping sponsor the Conference of Young People. And he was more excited than I was about the possibilities of it. From the art world, there were the Robert Merrills. I'm sure these old walls expected to resound to his voice. He sung for us so often, but tonight he was a guest. And Mrs. Isaac Stern, without her husband, who had a concert. And the Doa Sherrys. I'm getting a little concerned that our invitations to those in the world of arts and letters bring a higher proportion of regrets, although I know that a night for them may mean a $10,000 concert, an appearance the breaking of which would be a real scar to their career. But I shall try to send out our invitations earlier, and perhaps more carefully. At last the interminable line was over, and I took the president and we went into the blue room to sit with the ambassador on my left, and Peter Warburg and Abe Fortas and Dorothy Schiff and David Ginsburg and Abe Feinberg and Ogden Reed and Virginia Rusk. Beth always chooses such a delightful table for me. And it was good conversation. The president is talkative, almost garrulous. We discussed the birth of a country that is made up of people from 100 nations bound together only by Judaism. He hangs his whole hope of making unity out of them on education, especially on education beginning in early youth. So does his wife. He told me an interesting thing, too, that at the end of the war, he had gone to survey the concentration camps in Germany. And then Ambassador Harmon is, to me, one of the most interesting and capable-looking ambassadors here. Somehow the subject of unemployment insurance came up, and he said they had none in Israel. He was against it. If unemployment ever cropped up in the economy, they used instead public works. For instance, they could do an unlimited amount of reforestation. I asked him how they'd ever found trees that would grow on those rocky, barren hills. He said it took a lot of research. A certain type of pine had been discovered that would grow. And then he said, rather wryly, there would never be good commercial timber, but they dropped a lot of needles, and so they would replenish the topsoil for a long lead time he's thinking of. And besides, they would relieve the arid landscape to the eye. The moment when the singing violins come in is always the high point of a dinner to me. It is a thrill to all the guests. And tonight they played one that I noticed the president began to beat time to and smile, a favorite of his. For the first time, I thought our menu was rather sparse. Summer garden soup and fillet of sole, no red meat. The dessert named gracefully after the president's wife, Glacé Rochelle. I asked the president to autograph my menu, and he wrote at the bottom, Mazel Tov. Both he and the ambassador signed their names in Hebrew. When we dine in two rooms, we have had trouble before. With a loudspeaker and hearing the toast of the president from the state dining room, I'd taken all the precautions I could. Be sure it's in good order. Alert us to its beginning by an aide knocking on a glass or something. So tonight it went better. And then the president responded at very considerable length and charmingly. And we were out in the hall for coffee. And I took Mrs. Shazar, who is a bit old for standing, into the sofa in the green room, where Matilda Krim delighted the president and her by telling them about her years at the Weizmann Institute in Israel. Arthur had sat next to Mrs. Nugent at dinner, a happy choice of Bessie's. One can always depend upon him. The entertainment was Rudolf Serkin at his piano. I introduced him briefly, a man who, in the proud tradition of his religion, is a scholar, a worker, and a supreme artist. And he did a very short program of Bach and Mendelssohn and Brahms. I wish you could have seen the rapt expression on Abe Fortas's face. It was as though Lancelot had found the Holy Grail. Though drama is my first love, and musicals with gay choreography perhaps my second, I felt very proud of his wonderful program. And when Lucy congratulated him afterward, She said something like, "It's as though you poured your soul out through your music." And he beamed at her. I realized the president and Mrs. Shazar could never climb those narrow steps safely for our pictures with the artists. So I held out my hand to him, and he descended, and we managed them not too skillfully as other guests began to cluster around to thank him. For a president who is nearly 80, an early bedtime makes good sense, and so we escorted them to the North Portico about 11:30, and Lyndon lingered only about a half an hour afterward. And a little past 12, I, too, was upstairs to hear that Linda Bird, who'd taken Warren Lynn to celebrate her birthday by eating dinner with all the military aides in the mess, had adjourned to the treaty room with a birthday cake. It had been an interesting evening. I felt I had gotten more insight into the birth of this country. Both Mrs. Shazar and her husband had been builders of the Israeli nation for 50 years. She settled by the Sea of Galilee in one of the first kibbutzim in 1912, working in the fields and cooking and laundering, and later editing a monthly labor magazine for women. And she still works at education for the very young and at beautification. My main feeling at the end of the day was satisfaction that the staff had done so well, and that Lucy and Pat had mingled with the guests so gracefully all evening. In fact, Betty Beale had said that romance overshadowed the political world last night. Guests at President and Mrs. Johnson's dinner of Israeli President and Mrs. Shazar were more interested in greeting or getting a good look at Lucy and Pat than they were in meeting the figure of state. And they were fascinated when Linda, looking slender and beautiful in pale yellow, dimpled with obvious pleasure when asked if George Hamilton was coming to the wedding.